Welcome back to KSCJ Radio, 1360 AM, 94.9 FM in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vikalskis, and this is Having Read That, conversations with authors about their books.
I'm joined by Brian Lamb, the founder of C-SPAN. He and Susan Swain of C-SPAN are out with the new book, The Presidents, Noted Historians Rank America's Best and Worst Chief Executives. Brian, why did you choose to put this book out now?
We planned about 18 months ago to do this book, to come out right at the moment of our 40th anniversary. And there are always reasons for books. For one thing is, we don't make any money off of these books. That's just done because it adds to the overall mission of what we do. But, you know, presidents are, they're on our mind every day, at least people that pay attention to the news, because that's all they talk about. And so we thought, having done three surveys on presidents over the years, that this would be an opportune time to try to put this book together. And the person that really does the hard work on this was Susan Swain, who's our co-chief operating officer, co-chief executive officer, and I was the one that did the interviews originally, and we kind of put it all together that way.
Well, you have a chapter for each president, each in the words of a different historian, and cultivating the words for these chapters, as you said, came from the interviews. So did you go back and you had to kind of rework a little bit of things just so it made chronological sense, right?
Well, we've done these books over the years, and the mission is to take my questions out and to formulate a narrative so it's easier to read. I don't know about you, I particularly don't like the Q&A type books, and that's Susan's really talent to go back and look at it. I mean, I looked at them too, and we had to add interviews to it on the show that I do on Sunday nights. So the objective was to have a book that each chapter would be about a president, but not necessarily about their presidency, just intriguing people, kind of a primer. If you want to start looking at presidents and history, this would be an easier way to do it than reading a full biography on them.
Well, these interviews aired over the course of many years, and what new meaning did they give for you as you read them all together in one place now?
Well, I find out how little I know, in spite of the fact that I read the original books, I interviewed the individuals that wrote them. I helped prepare this book with Susan and Rachel Katz as we put it all together. And I found out that I keep going back and learning things that I either didn't learn before or didn't retain. It's very complicated to study the history of this country and our presidents. And it just helps you. If you like this stuff, it's just a reminder of what you need to know.
Well, John F. Kennedy said that no one has the right to grade a president. Is there any truth to that notion?
Oh, we have a right to do anything we want to when it comes to that. I get what he's talking about. There is absolutely nothing like being in that job. I've never been it, never will be in it, but you can just see by watching it over the years that is an incredible job, no matter whether you like or dislike the person in the job. And I think he was just reflecting on the fact that James Buchanan was listed last and all this stuff, and he said you have no right to put him there unless you walk in his shoes. But, you know, the strange thing about the First Amendment is we got a right to do a lot of this stuff, and we do it.
Well, as you've read these biographies over the years, how much time do you think has to pass after a president leaves office to truly have an accurate historical context to judge that administration?
Probably, I don't know what the years are, but it's probably 25 to 50 years at a minimum.
Have you seen books come out that, I mean, we see, everybody has a campaign autobiography now, and then we see biographies written while they're in office. Bob Woodward has mastered that technique. But realistically, have you seen books come out that you know just aren't complete because not enough time has passed?
Oh, absolutely. You know, interestingly enough, and I, again, I'm not a historian, I read about it and I like it and it's fun, but Dumas Malone, who did a 7-volume series on Thomas Jefferson, refused to really deal with the Sally Hemings question and whether or not he had children by Sally Hemings, and it's been proven since then. I mean, my suspicion, he's long gone, but my suspicion was he was so in love with Thomas Jefferson that he just wanted to avoid it and protect him, and that happened for a long time. Down at Monticello, they've changed their attitude down there. They now admit that there was this relationship. But, it takes a long time. And, you know, emotionally, right after a presidency, emotionally people are very much either hate them or love them. And so it's not to be terribly trusted if somebody's writing a history book 4 or 5 years later.
As you've talked to these historians over the years, do you get the sense that they loved the person or the president that they were studying, or could they have done a book about somebody they absolutely despised?
I think they can do both, but I would say that probably 90% of the books are written by historians that either like the person they're writing about or tend to like them when they start the process. Once in a great while, when they get into the archives, they change their mind. One of the most visible historians of presidents in the country is Robert Carroll. And I suspect that Robert Carroll, if you really knew from the very beginning, changed his mind about Lyndon Johnson along the way. The more he studied him, the more he went to where Lyndon Johnson lived. He's still not finished with his fifth book and final book, and he says he wants to go to Vietnam and spend some time there to get a feeling for what the country was like before he passes judgment on the Vietnam War. So it depends on the historian. It depends on how much time they have, and it depends on what their end goal is.
You mentioned the Vietnam War, and that's something that came out in this book, is how much war affects a presidency. So how have you viewed that over the course of these presidents and how they dealt with war?
I've learned a lot about that. I grew up in my first war was, Korea was around. I was born in 41, and Korea was 1950-53, but I didn't pay any attention to it. And then I was old enough to be drafted in the Vietnam War and joined the Navy. And so I started paying attention then, and my first look at government closely was the Vietnam War. And if you go back to that period and compare it to what was today with what was being said back then, you know that the government was not being honest. And nobody likes me to use the word lying, but that's where I first learned how often people in politics will just tell you a flat out lie in order to get elected. And a lot of that happened around Vietnam. And so that had a big impact on me. And as you go through these different chapters, you'll see that whether it's Woodrow Wilson in World War One, where he suggested we shouldn't go fight there and did, or whether it's FDR in World War II, where he suggested we shouldn't go fight there and did, or whether it's I have a secret plan to end the war with Richard Nixon, and he didn't. I mean, you go on down the list. War played a major impact on a lot of these presidencies, including somebody that nobody pays attention to today, James K. Polk.
Well, and we're talking with Brian Lamb, founder of C-SPAN, about his book, The Presidents. Noted historians rank America's best and worst chief executives. C-SPAN put this out with the help of Brian Lamb and Susan Swain and lots of other folks behind the scenes. Brian, something else that came out in this book is how many health problems a lot of these presidents dealt with. And I don't think that's as well known as anything. We get the president's medical records. I mean, every time he gets a checkup at Bethesda, we hear about it on the news nowadays. But back in the day, I mean, a lot of these presidents had some serious health issues.
Best one example I can give you is Grover Cleveland. He was president twice. He was elected as our 22nd president. Then Benjamin Harrison beat him in the Electoral College, which sounds familiar today. And then he came back. And in his second term, he developed cancer of the mouth. And they didn't want the public to know about it, so they operated on the tumor off the coast of New York City on a yacht. And they never told the public. The public never knew it until 1917, which was long after he was dead. And this is a little gross, but there is the tumor at the Mutter Museum in Philadelphia. I've been there. I've seen it. And we didn't know about it when he was president. That probably would not happen today. And that's just one of many stories where over the years they covered up. I mean, Woodrow Wilson, of course, is one of the best. Covered up the health situation.
That Mutter Museum, by the way, full of all kinds of medical oddities.
It's fantastic.
Let's talk about the presidential administrations. You worked for two of them, right?
Well, I worked in the Nixon administration in the Office of Telecommunications Policy for 3.5 years. I got a collateral assignment, meaning it wasn't my main job, to be, quote, a social aide, unquote, to President Lyndon Johnson. And that was the president in my life that I got to know the most. He didn't know me. I knew him because I stood right next to him on many occasions and introduced people that were in the receiving line. And it gave me a tremendous opportunity just to watch a human being be president.
Does that alter the way that you view the presidency then going forward for the last 40 years with C-SPAN?
Oh, yeah.
How?
Seeing them up close is extraordinary. And a lot is written about Lyndon Johnson. He was not the smoothest individual in the world, but he was probably the most engaged of all presidents, and meaning he was closely engaged with the congressional process and all that. And seeing that up close, there's no other way to define it. And Robert Caro, I think, might have met him in passing once. He's never been around him, and I've talked to Bob many times about what he was like as a human being up close, and hoping to help him write his book.
You know, something I found interesting, when Joe Biden announced his candidacy for the 2020 presidential election, he made a comment that 8 years of Donald Trump in the White House would forever and fundamentally alter the character of this nation. As vast as the federal government has become, is it possible for any president to alter the character of a nation nowadays?
I don't know if they alter the character of the nation so much as they definitely have the power to change things. And, you know, who knows? Donald Trump has done things that no other president has done. A lot of it is, you know, personal character things that we don't expect out of a president. I don't know what's worse, knowing exactly what he's like or finding out 20 years later that, like John F. Kennedy, he was doing some things with his relationship with women that's downright disgusting, and we didn't learn about it until many years later, literally like 45 years after his death, when Mimi Beardsley wrote her book about what he did to her when she was 18 years old and in the White House. I don't know what's worse. I think all I would say to somebody is just open your eyes at all times and don't believe everything you hear, because there's so much spinning going on that you can't trust a lot of what you hear. And just study it a little closer than just the headlines.
Well, and that's been part of the genius behind C-SPAN, is that this unfiltered view of government. But have all your hopes and dreams for C-SPAN come true over the last 40 years?
Not in the least. One of the things I didn't expect after some tremendous years of growth, that the numbers are going down now because technology is changing and people are not subscribing to cable like they used to, because the younger people are doing everything on their phones. Secondly, I thought people would pay closer attention to their government. I'm not so sure they pay less attention. The kind of increase in the amount of money being spent by governments without being backed up with money in the Treasury is extraordinary. You know, $22 trillion in debt, there's no way to describe that. I thought people would pay a little closer attention than they haven't. Certainly, our impact on politics has not been nearly as significant as, say, the major news networks that people tend to go to all the time because of the narrative or the side they're on. And we're not on a side. We have no personalities. We have no ads. We have no ratings. We just don't look or sound like anybody else. And that's hard for people in a country like this to understand. We have the 10%ers. By the way, I cannot let this interview go by without mentioning the Sioux City Watchdogs. And I wonder, Brian, if you know who the Sioux City Watchdogs were.
I do not.
There was a group of women, older women, in the 80s when we started, who used to watch C-SPAN every day and then get on the phone and talk to each other about what they saw. And back in the 80s, I was invited to appear on the Phil Donahue Show, which was in Chicago. And I flew out there, and the Sioux City Watchdogs flew in to be on the program. And the most memorable person of all, because of her name, and I'm sure she's deceased, was Creola Paradise. Somebody listening to this will remember the great Creola Paradise and the Sioux City Watchdogs.
I do know the Paradise. I know who the Paradise family was, and they were a fairly prominent judicial family in town here, so I know who you're talking about.
Well, it was that was in the early days kind of an endorsement of what we were doing. And I'm not so sure how long they continued to do that, but I thought that was, I always thought when we started that providing, and at that time, you know, women were not nearly as active and involved in politics as they are today, that I thought this would give them a leg up. They could, if they had time, if they were homemakers and they were home, they could flip this on, they could learn about the process. And when the husband came home at night, they could just completely snow them and because the husband hadn't paid any attention during the day, and they would know more about the process than he would. And of course, this has all changed since then. But the Sioux City Watchdogs will always have a warm spot in my heart.
Well, you know, you announced you're going to be retiring from C-SPAN in May, and between book notes and Q&A, I've been a regular viewer of those programs for decades, so this is kind of like Johnny Carson retiring from The Tonight Show for me. But for all these viewers that you're essentially breaking up with after all these years, don't you owe us some sort of interview alimony where once a month you send us a few minutes of an interview with an author or a newsmaker just so we can continue this intellectual lifestyle we've become accustomed to with you?
You know, you're not too far off. I mean, if I had my choice, and I don't know if I'll do this, I would do that with a podcast. And I would be just, frankly, selfishly, it would be for my own education. But we know so many of these authors, and it can be done by phone, and I may end up doing it because it's just for people that want information, the simple process that we use seems to be helpful to some people. And, you know, you've kind of triggered my memory on some of the things I'm thinking about doing, and I do not want to retire. I'm not young, but this is too much fun and too interesting.
Well, we certainly hope that you come back in some form, and I'm sure that all of your regular viewers will be there to support it. The book is The Presidents, Noted Historians Rank America's Best and Worst Chief Executives by Brian Lamb, Susan Swain, and C-SPAN. It's available wherever books are sold. You can get it online through C-SPAN Store or on Amazon. Brian, thanks for all you've done to educate this public with C-SPAN. Best of luck in your retirement. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Brian.
This has been Having Read That on KSCJ Radio in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vakulskas. Check out all of our episodes on our website, kscj.com. Also, be sure to like Having Read That on Facebook and subscribe to our iTunes podcast. Thanks to segment producer John Weisler. We will be back next time.